And welcome back to Success Made at Last Travel Show. We are Rick and Carla Tocchini. It's nice to have you back again with us to talk about our favorite topic, which is traveling and living seasonally. Our very special guest today is Ida Zoll, who is from a long lineage of professionals associated with National Geographic. Ida, it's so nice to have you on. Welcome to the Success Made to Last Travel Show.
Okay, I was born in New York City, but raised up in Washington, D.C. The reason being is that D.C. is the head of the National Geographic Society, and my father worked for the National Geographic, and so I was born traveling, really. Once we were of a little bit of an age, he took his wife and two children, including me, everywhere, and did articles with us. If not throughout the world, but a lot of places, and some of the more dangerous places back then he went to by himself, one of them being the Amazon, and that's why I now so badly, as an adult, wanted to see what he was seeing. So travel is in my blood, and if I don't need a big car, I don't need a big place, but I just need to go and look and explore.
Exactly. Well, so when did you, because he went to the Amazon and you wanted to go, when did you get to the Amazon? Because you've obviously been.
This is in just 8 months ago. I finally got there. And he went to the Amazon in Brazil. And Brazil, it's the size of the United States, by the way. Mm-hmm. I wanted to do it a little differently, and I went to the Amazon in Peru, which, by the way, the Amazon basin is the size of California.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So how did this journey begin? How did this all happen?
Okay. I heard about this town where Eiffel, who built the Eiffel Tower, had gone into Peru up the Amazon with one of his buildings. In 1900, there was a rubber boom there, and lots of explorers from Europe really came over, including Eiffel. And that's when the city had a boom. It then went sort of bust. But in the meantime, there is an Eiffel building there. So that attracted me.
Oh my God.
Isn't it? It's interesting.
It is.
And then I also, by the way, I nobody knew about it really. And I know some people who go places and what, you know. And finally, I met a lady at a party, a stranger. And I said she was in travel. I said, have you ever been to Iquitos, Peru? And she said, well, yes, I have. And I said, well, what's it like? And she looked at me with one sentence and said, it's the Wild West. And I said, what do you mean? She said, there's no rules. There's no laws. It's just the Wild West. And I said, well, is it dangerous? And she said, no, it's just that there'll be parties in the middle of the night. And when I got there, should we go there? Shall I go ahead and go there?
Yeah.
When I got there, there's no the traffic, there's no lights, there's no stop signs, there's no correct way to drive, and there are no cars. There are these three-wheeled vehicle tuk-tuks, they call them over in Thailand, you know, with little canopies that sort of made it look like the Wild West. But nobody's going to rob you, but you're going to get run over. I mean, that was the danger of the city.
Oh, and so when did you go there? Was this?
This was exactly last September. So it's about a year ago. Yeah. It's very recent.
And how long were you there, and what did you do while you were there?
Okay, well, my goal is Iquitos. I do have a travel agent here, and she said, look, that's a very interesting place, but as long as you're going so far away to such a fascinating place, she put me for 4 days on a boat going west. And then I said, yes, but I want to spend time in Iquitos. And she said, okay, then you'll spend time in Iquitos, but that is the launching area for the lodges, the rainforest lodges going east. And she said, stay another, so altogether I'd say about 2 weeks.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Tell us about that experience.
Okay. Well, the first thing about it, and it is known for this, it's the largest city in the world that cannot be reached by road. You can only get there by water, meaning the river, or an airplane. So you go through Lima, and then you go up to Iquitos. But there are no roads. and which also makes it fascinating. And then the main thing that you notice right away is that it's considered, not just me, the noisiest city in the world. The reason being is that these little tuk-tuks, there are 38,000 of them, with no laws and no rules, all honking and moving, and they sound like lawnmowers. So, I mean, you adjust very quickly because it's so mind-blowing, the place, so exotic. But also, they were very smart when they put me in a hotel. They say, look, the only thing you really want from a hotel there is quiet. So they put me way off on a tiny dead-end road, right in the middle of things. But that was great. So the noise, the tuk-tuks going all the time, and then honking, and not like honking, but honking with notes like la 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 la. That was my first experience there. I went up. On the boat, I did learn some wonderful stuff about down there. You know about the pink dolphin, right?
Yes, we have heard of that.
It's a legendary thing.
Yes.
But it isn't legendary. It's real. And we saw, hundreds of them outside of Quito's, too. Every time you got on a boat, you'd see them up by the shore. And if you go on any of the tributaries, they're pink. And it's very hard to photograph them because they leap out of the water so fast that by the time you click a camera of any kind, they're gone. But the lovely point about them is that they're sort of sacred. You know, like the cows in India?
Yes.
No one will touch, no one indigenous or visitors, if you touch, do anything wrong to a dolphin, they're considered, the pink dolphins are both, they will bewitch you. And, there's a lot of, different sort of religious beliefs there. And the male dolphins will make a woman pregnant. And that is their explanation for, a miscarriage. It's sort of protective in a way. They say if a woman has a miscarriage, it's because a pink dolphin has slept with her in the night without her knowing it, and she can't give birth to an infant that's both pink dolphin and human. So they're protected. If you're found messing with a pink dolphin, you'll pay huge consequences probably of money and so forth. But to see them, they are on the magical side, I have to say. And they also said that this wonderful idea that the natives, if they drank a certain plant, they would become a jaguar.
Wow. What was the plant?
I don't know. What they said was certain plants. An interesting fact on the side is that about a quarter of the pharmaceutical drugs that we use, are discovered and come from the Amazon. And they say the wonderful thing from Iquitos, it's a launching pad. It's a gateway into the rainforest. So from there, we went on a boat. And we went to see these. I had a guide, and he took me. It was just him and me. He took me into tribes where the chief would literally say, if one of us, in his language, not even in Spanish, but we had a translator, he said, if you drink this, if you have cancer, this will fix you. If you drink this, then you have diabetes. I don't know if they know what diabetes is exactly, but whatever the symptoms are, this will heal you. And then I thought, and I looked around, and then he said, because I thought, these tribal people drinking the water and everything, they can't live much past 45. And he said, no, on the contrary, I'm 76. And he said, the natives live into their 80s with these medicinal, drinks that they make. That appear to heal them.
All of the medications that doctors prescribe here that we think are supposed to be wonderful, and here they have their own. It's just like the Indians in the United States. Have your own medicine.
They have systems that have kept them alive, for centuries, really. They have no electricity, by the way, when you go into the trial. Silly mistake. I said, where do you keep your refrigerator? And they looked at me and said, we don't have a refrigerator. They go to bed at 7:30. It's all just to do with the light and the sun.
Exactly.
there's one other, of course, huge attraction. Your daughter actually knew about it. And this is, this is not an attraction for me, but there's a famous drug there called ayahuasca. And it's an hallucinatory drug along the lines of LSD, although much more powerful. And one of the things, and there are shamans there, you know, which are magical men. And I met a shaman officially through the guide. So he was a good shaman, meaning that many of the shamans, they offer you to take a trip. It's a 4-day trip on this ayahuasca. It's pretty famous, this drug, actually. It comes up through Peru. And, but for 4 days, you purify your system. Is to say you throw up and so forth for 2 days in a hut with the guy, with a good shaman, and then for the next 2 days you see spirits. And I mean, you really hallucinate. It's a real hallucinogen. But the point is that some shamans are illegal and will take all your stuff and, you know, leave you naked in the jungle. I mean, there's all sorts of rumors like that. But this fellow was legitimate, and he, at the end of his pitch, where he's trying to sell, you know, cough medicines and all sorts of things that I say are much better than Western medication, he said, "Now, if any of you are staying for 4 days and want to take ayahuasca, I will take you into a hut into the jungle, and we will do it." You know, with about 3 or 4 people. It's not necessarily you alone, but it's not more than 3 or 4 people. And so it's I did see a couple of new age sort of old hippie guys walking around looking zonked out of their head in a ketosis. You know, just that's what they're down there for. But
Oh my gosh. So how long were you on the Amazon going down? Did you just do this one day, or were you there?
No, I did it in 3 parts, actually, which was so wonderful. My travel agent here connected me with somebody, connected for me with a travel agent down there who did the suggestion. So I was 4 days, I was sort of the posher part of the trip, on a boat. And the boat was only about 30 people. I mean, these aren't big liners. These are small 2-story boats with about 30 rooms. And that's where I learned all this wonderful stuff about jaguars and pink dolphins and the magical stuff. And that we would get on skiffs. The boats were big enough to drag skiffs, and we'd go up. But that part of the trip, and it's wonderful, but it's all about the birds, the monkeys, the animals, and the piranhas. I caught it. You fish for a piranha. He takes you to a place where there's thousands of them and says, "Now here's where you don't fall in. This is where you don't put your arm in the water." And you just put an old-fashioned line and hook into the water and you pull up a piranha. I mean, I do have hard copy pictures of me catching one, and everybody did. And then you throw them back into the water, but they're vicious, tiny little teeth, and they're small. They're only about 6 inches, but if you were to fall into the water, the idea is that they just, about 1,000 will just eat you. But it was more about the nature. And we would get out and we'd walk through the jungle, and it had nothing to do particularly with the tribal people. So then I went to a ketosis, which I hope to tell you a little bit more about in a minute. But from a ketosis, then I went in a small boat. From now on, it's all small, little, like motorboats. Yeah. And for 3, 4, and 5 hours, we went to one tribal village. It did well, and it still had money. It was like a farmer's market. Then we went to the next, and I had been told, bring things to trade, because some tribes, they're not yet dealing in money. They're dealing in trading. And that's when they took me, and I stayed in literally a tiny little log cabin in the jungle. There are 3 places. It's called Explorama, and I stayed in the one that they said, listen, this is the most civilized, which you may prefer, and I did. Being civilized meant you had your own bathroom. And then if you go farther to others, and they're wonderful, and they're always places, you know, where the tours or individuals are coming to stay for periods of time, to stay in these wonderful little log cabins. They're clean, they're neat. I did find a lizard about the size of my arm in one of mine, but I just shooed him out. I mean, he wasn't dangerous. But from those lodges, is where then this wonderful guide that I had, Roberto, who grew up there, but he wanted to improve himself, so he learned English so he could do this touring. I kind of admired him quite a bit. And he then... he took me then to the final village where the women are topless and the men are wearing these sort of straw skirts. And you see this very primitive life. And the significant thing about it, really, is they don't even know we exist.
Exactly.
They don't know that North America exists. They don't know that Lima, Peru exists. I mean, they may might have a hint about some big city somewhere called Lima, but they don't know that there's Europe. They don't know that there's Australia. They know exactly 20 miles on each side of the Amazon River.
Yeah.
And that they know great. I mean, they know.
That's where they hunt. That's where they live.
It's where they fish. It's where they don't clean. This I was shocked. This is why they need these wonderful drinks. They drink the water out of the Amazon, which is not polluted in our sense, but it is filled with parasites. I mean, it's a huge river. I mean, it's at one point you almost think you're on the ocean. You cannot see the other side. And but he said that's no problem. We drink that because once a year the children get half a cup of this, and we get a whole cup, and it's a solution which purges your whole body of parasites, so they live fine.
Oh my gosh!
But in a different lifestyle, as you can see.
Exactly, where we would not be able to adapt for years.
It would not be for us. I don't think we're. It's not a question of genetics so much as how you're brought up since you're an infant. Do you know what I mean? What you eat and what you drink. You see a misinterpretation in my feeling. You see all these sort of scuzzy pictures of sort of these dirtyish people and so forth, and that's not what it's like at all. It's neat. There's no walls. There's no electricity. There's no language, either English or Spanish. Do you know what I mean? And the tribe we finally went to has blowguns. That's how they, if they want, you know, something other than a fish, you know, maybe they want a monkey or they want a, well, in the olden days, of course, they could kill you too, you know, with battles. The other thing that was a revelation to me, because we think, when you get there, you realize, and I have read this actually, that you are on a frontier. This is the last true frontier in our hemisphere. I mean, there are frontiers in Mongolia, certainly, and probably in Africa, but here, this is a real frontier. And when we went to the final lodge, which was very, very primitive, which is where usually explorers or scientists or National Geographic people go, they go there, but they don't. They're not allowed to go deeper into the jungle where there are still tribes that have never encountered people like us. And the reason they're not allowed is because they could be killed. You know what I mean? But I'm talking the size of California now. This isn't just around the corner. So they can go very close. And I know my father went very deep in Brazil years ago. But now this is still a frontier is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah,
which was of course a huge attraction to go see what's going on. What I'm not mentioning is the rain. Now, this is a rainforest the size of California. So I did write in my short story, your clothing is wet 99% of the time. And you also it's not like 24/7, but when it does rain, it's torrential. And I was in Iquitos one time, and I heard this noise. I thought, oh, my God, what's happening? I'm having an hallucination. And I opened the door, and it was rain. But it rains maybe for an hour or two, and then the sun comes out.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it's not relentless. Yeah. And then I was up in the jungle, and it sort of would rain a little bit almost every day. But then you'll have a beautiful 2 days of sunshine. Hot, of course. But it is a rainforest. That's to be expected. You're not going to, if you've got curly hair, it's going to get curlier. you're not going to look your best.
Ida, as promised, we wrap up every show with the sensory lightning round. So let's go. Start with sight. What is your most memorable picture in your camera or smartphone from your trip to the Amazon?
Okay, that's an easy one. They had me holding an anaconda that was at least 10 feet long. Now, anacondas don't bite you. They strangle you. And, of course, a man was standing right by. Do you know what I mean? And this was, it wasn't a zoo. It's not like a zoo at all, but there's a certain places where the animals, they sort of nurture them and keep them happy. And he passed me an anaconda, must have weighed it. It was very heavy. And in the picture, in that they're strangling snakes, he's huge. He's 10, 12 feet long, and he's still a baby. You can see him curling his tail around my ankle. He's beginning the strangulation process.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yikes.
I mean, there's somebody standing by, and it's not going to happen, but that's what he does.
Okay. Let's move to sound. What is the sound of Peru that lingers in your ears?
Oh, boy. Actually, I don't know. I suppose much of it would be bird calls. You know, it's a center of birding. In the first part of my trip, we just looked, I mean, parrots and exotic birds. I think there's more exotic birds there than any other place in the world. That said, and also the sound of the Amazon. You know, it is a river. You're hearing it's under it. You're hearing it.
I could have sworn you were going to say 38,000 melodic tuk-tuks.
You're absolutely right, except you have to just turn it off.
What?
You won't. You won't have a good time unless mentally you sort of just adjust anyway.
Okay, now let's move to touch. We always ask this question in the form of the most memorable person that you met on your trip.
Okay, well, that would have to be the chief of the most primitive tribe. Now, they're small people, Peruvian, natural indigenous Peruvians. I'm 5'6", and they were all about, the tallest were 5 feet. But he was a chief, and he had great presence, and he asked me to dance. Now, not like the waltz or something, but they were running around this wonderful sort of hut that they'd built, and there were exotic instruments playing, and by dance, he took my hand. I found out later he was 76, and I could barely keep up with him, I'm telling you. He danced me around, and it would just meant running around and around, and throughout the whole dance, he was holding his blowgun, which is about, 10 feet of hard wood. It wasn't some little blowgun. It was a 10-foot pole. My tour guide, he said, that's great. He showed you great respect asking you to dance. There was this kind of a chemistry that was very, very wonderful there.
Wow, that's a great memory. Okay, two left. If you were to serve a memorable, tasty meal from your trip, what's on the plate tonight?
Fish.
Ooh.
Fish, 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 and more fish. Fishes you never heard of. There are 3,000 species of fish in the Amazon River, which is like triple the amount in the Atlantic Ocean. I mean, it's delicious, but I will tell you, about halfway through my trip in Iquitos, I had to have a hamburger.
Okay, last question. What aroma from Peru still lingers today?
Okay, this is kind of profound. The aroma that lingers is oxygen. That's not an aroma exactly, but you are completely know that you're breathing a kind of air that you rarely, rarely get. It's so oxygenated and so, I mean, of course, it's rich and it's damp, I suppose, an odor, but in a good way. I felt energized by the oxygen down there. You know, some kind of crystal clean air. That's why I could keep up with the chief. I mean, I just suddenly felt, honestly, I felt like 5 years younger breathing that air.
Man, we've never heard that answer before. That's amazing.
They call it the lungs of the world. And so you really are in a place where just the oxygen content coming from a rainforest is very, very high.
Okay, wrapping up today's show, we'd love for you to provide a word of encouragement to travelers out there who are just pent up and ready to get on with their adventure of life.
Well, of course, I've got a trip all planned already that I can't do yet, but we just have to hang on. And I did do one. I took a tiny 2-hour flight down to Baja, Mexico, about a month ago. I mean, it was Alaska Airlines, which they guaranteed, you know, incredible levels of safety. But my encouragement is we've got to go back to travel, and we will. It's just, we just have to wait a while, I guess.
Ida, we must do another show with you. You are so descriptive. It was as if we were on the Amazon with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. I've been looking forward to this ever since I met you. So thank you so much.
That was Ida Zoll. We appreciate her being on our Success Made to Last travel show. We always appreciate experts and people that can tell great stories like Ida, who could take us on an adventure just through the mere words and stories and that they express. So thanks again, Ida. And listen, we just want to provide that additional word of encouragement. We will get through this, folks. You will get to travel again. Your adventure is just around the corner. Until next time, as we always say here, may you live and find the best version of you through travel. Have a great week.
So thanks to our sponsor, Edward Jones. They are our trusted financial advisor. And Edward Jones has been instrumental in helping us pivot our lives built around health, happiness, travel, and adding value to other people's lives. You can contact our advisor, Serban Marasini, by emailing him at serban.marasine@edwardjones.com. And thanks again to their sponsorship of this program.